Oh! What are you doing?
Massaging your neck.
Oh. Of course, massaging.
Boning up on football?
Yeah, yeah. You know what? There are a lot of players named Dion these days. What a cool name, Dion. If I were going to change my name, I'd go with Dion.
Dion Benes?
Well, as a woman, it makes no sense. But, I mean, well, let's say I was you and decided I was going to change my name for no real reason whatsoever. Dion Rifkin. Wow. That is so cool.
Dion Rifkin?
Well, maybe you're not the Dion type. Okay, then let's see. Let's see. What do we got? OJ! OJ Rifkin! Oh, you can't use a name, it's just initials. Oh, please, please, please change your name to OJ. Please, it would be so great.
Elaine, what is going on?
Everybody, and welcome to the Nightfly Podcast with me, Dave Juska, your host. Tuesday, April 28th, 2020 edition. I hope everybody's doing well. I'm doing tepid. I'm tepid. I'm having some trouble. I don't have the virus, but, you know, I believe I do because I'm a crazy Jew. I'm a crazy Jew. I'm sick that way. I'm sick. Get my toolbox. I'll come over there. I'm going to fuck you up good. I'm sick that way. Yeah. Come over there with my tool belt. All right, Jerky. Yeah, that's right. Well, it is the Nightfly. It is a Tuesday, and we're back. We never leave. I almost didn't make it today, but I'm doing the podcast anyway because, again, the podcast, like the Marine Corps, lives on. Well, yeah, I haven't been feeling very well. Again, I know I said that last week, but it has continued. I have had headaches, and then I had dizziness, and I'm taping this on the Monday before it comes out on the Tuesday. And I wanted to tape it Saturday, but I wasn't ready. And then I wanted to tape it yesterday, and I wasn't ready. I was feeling very dizzy. And again, that's not a sign of the virus, but something is wrong with me. And it got so bad last night that I started to panic because of the crazy, psychosomatic, anxiety-ridden Jew person that I am. I started to think I had some horrible disease or something. I don't know. I've been dizzy for 3 days. I'm still not feeling, you know, great, but I thought I could get through the podcast. And I've just been dizzy where usually I chalk it up to headaches and dizziness to dehydration because I do not drink any amount of the required water that is necessary on a daily basis. And as you all know, Dave Juskow has only been eating, you know, Dinty Moore beef stew and Chef Boyardee stuff, and that stuff is full of sodium. And that's why that's not what I do. I normally don't eat that stuff because I know it's full of sodium and I know it's bad, but times are tough. I don't know what else to do. I don't know what it is I usually do where I don't get dehydrated because I should be dehydrated all the time. You know, especially when I drink, I get headaches all the time because that makes sense that I'm dehydrated. But I guess all the coffee and the salt is added up. And I'm assuming it's dehydration. Now, today I was supposed to go to the city MD, which is the only doctor I have right now, and check it out. However, yesterday I talked to our friend Alina, the nurse, and I said, she's like, how are you? And I'm like, I'm not good. I'm going to the city MD tomorrow. And she's like, all right, what do you got? You know, she's exactly the kind of person you want to calm you down. She's like, feel your pulse. And I'm like, I don't feel any pulse. I feel no pulse. Because, you know, I don't know how to find the pulse and I'm taking it wrong. But then I guess it was beating okay. But what happened was last night, which was Sunday night, I'm hanging around. I'm like, why am I dizzy? Let me take my temperature because, you know, I got that. She gave me that thermometer. And it was 96.2. So, of course, I start to panic, you know, because I know it's been under for a while. It's been 97. But, you know, what am I, 100 that I'm frail and what am I, girl? I got under? That's ridiculous. Am I anemic? What's the matter with me? So 96.2, I start panicking. So like an idiot, I look it up on Google. You should never look up anything you have on the internet because it's always, they give you the worst scenarios. I don't know why I keep doing it, but I started to panic. 96.2 is low. Now, of course, at first I thought I'm just taking my temperature the wrong way. I'm not doing it right because I heard I was doing it the wrong way. But, you know, I'm still starting to panic. And the first thing it says on Google, just look up 96.2. It just says, you have a medical emergency. So then I start to go crazy. I'm like, oh my, I start to get chills. They say I'm suffering from hypothermia. I just start to get cold. I take a shower. I have some tea. And then all of a sudden, I take my temperature again. It's 98. But I know I tricked the thermometer, you know? So I'm still panicked and I'm starting to get cold. I'm starting to shiver. So I put on a flannel shirt and a hoodie, you know, and I'm feeling better, but I'm panicked. And then I talked to Alina and I said, I'm dying. And she's like, no, you probably have anxiety. And that's what's causing it. Because, of course, I'm going into the kitchen. I'm saying, this is impossible that I'm freezing because I wasn't before I read it on the internet. You know, I was perfectly fine all day in shorts and a t-shirt all day. Not one chill. You know, so I knew it was in my mind. But she's like, you know, I'm like, maybe I should take a Xanax. She's like, yeah, that's a good idea. You got to relax. Because you're making yourself crazy, which it was. Now, we've decided I am dehydrated. And it made me feel better because I had been drinking like at least 5 or 6 cups of water like really quick, like a day. So I'm like, why isn't it getting better? But she says it takes 72 hours. Old man. She's like, you're an old man. You need to drink a shitload of water. It's very easily to get dehydrated, especially the shit you're eating. And you are dehydrated and that's the issue. And it takes 72 hours, which makes sense. The timeline adds up. So I said, well, I won't go to the city MD for one more day. I'll see what happens. I woke up today pretty good. Right now, you know, I have in between a headache and dizziness. But again, I'm drinking the water and I'm waiting one more day. Now, tomorrow, if it still feels weird, I'll go. But I'll just keep drinking water all day. But again, you know, in my head, I'm also thinking this is exactly what Vic Henley did, who just died. You know, he got hit by a car. He was internally bleeding. He just drank water until he wasn't peeing blood anymore. I mean, that was his, you know, I'm like, we're all idiots. I didn't get hit by a car or anything, but I don't know. Something's obviously wrong. But I still leave it up to dehydration because I do not drink enough water. I have one cup in the morning and then maybe a cup at night with dinner, let alone all the salty foods I drink, and it's not nearly enough. So I had that and some Gatorade. And I felt much better last night after talking to her. I took the Xanax. It was so funny. I took the Xanax. I'm so paranoid. And, you know, who isn't at this point? You know, everybody's turned into a nervous Nelly Jew at this point. You know, you all think you got the virus. You know, I do go outside a lot. I'm like, where would I have picked it up from? You know, who knows? But maybe taking food to, you know, the newspaper. I really didn't think I had the virus. I wasn't, you know, but I wasn't, my heart wasn't racing, but of course it was because I was having a panic attack. So of course I think it's racing and, you know, everything is, I'm shortness of breath because I'm having a panic attack because I'm crazy. But again, who's not feeling that? You know, everybody, as soon as you get a sore throat, you cough once, you're thinking you got it. How can you not think that way? But with Vic, you know, he had a thing to his brain, and I'm like, I have that. You know, I mean, I'm making myself crazy. Meanwhile, I take the Xanax, you know, I relax a little bit. I'm sitting watching TV, And even though I'm watching TV, I'm still paranoid. But once I took the Xanax, it's funny. I'm wearing all this clothing and I'm like, boy, it's hot in here, huh? You know, like I realized, like, I wasn't even taking it off as a joke. And then I realized, I'm like, look at me. I'm such a fool. I'm like, boy, it's getting hot in here. You know, before I thought I was dying of hypothermia. And clearly the Xanax like relaxed me a little bit. And I was having some sort of panic attack, you know, which again is normal in this. Everything we're going through, you know, it's just absolutely normal. So again, I'll give it one more day. We'll see. I still have a, you know, minor headache right now. I feel like I could get one, you know, if I do something stupid or whatever. I still say my sinuses are somehow clogged, even though I don't have a runny nose or anything. But maybe it's this time of the year. Maybe it's some sort of hay fever. Who knows? But I just haven't felt right, and I didn't think I could bring the podcast to you. I really thought I was going to have to miss a week or a day or whatever because, you know, it just. I was sitting down looking at all this stuff yesterday and my head is spinning, you know, as if like I'm hungover or something. That's not good. But right now I'm chalking it up to dehydration, which does make a heck of a lot of sense. I do not drink enough water and I, you know, am older and it would make a lot of sense to be dehydrated. And like I said, well, I drank a lot of water yesterday. It's still not good, but she says it takes 72 hours to, you know, get your engine going again, as you might say. You know, you gotta think of it like kind of a car. You gotta keep putting oil in it or it dries up, right? I just really hate water. It's not as delightful as the sugar drinks that I enjoy so much. And that's what I drink, you know, eating two bags of Circus peanuts. I mean, I'm just eating so unhealthy because I don't know, I'm cooking. But what am I cooking? I'm cooking the things I know, these sweet and sour meatballs, the tuna noodle casserole. What I make? I made seafood Newberg the other day. All technically salty foods. Now, I don't salt my foods a lot, but I guess it all just has salt in it. You know, whatever I'm putting in. It's funny because I never use salt because I guess everything I'm using is pretty salty. You know, sauces and things like that and soup and stuff. I guess it's already got salt in it, so that's what's probably killing me. I told you I haven't had a vegetable in 10 years. Well, the tuna noodle casserole is onions and mushrooms, but I don't think that makes a difference very much. I need to eat something healthy. And I guess I do when things are normal delivery-wise. Even sushi, I guess, you know, a little fish is nice. I haven't had any of that. Alina said, go to the grocery store and get some fish. And I'm like, they're always out of fish when I go there. So it's very difficult to maneuver this. But sometimes I feel like when I'm eating sushi, it's not unhealthy. It's just a little fattening because of the rice and stuff. So I really just don't know. I don't know how to eat healthy. I still eat like a 13-year-old boy. I've just never been taught anything else. And until I, you know, get some form of nutritionist who tells me what to eat, I mean, I'd love to have a place make my meals for me every day. But that, you know, I know they have those places, but I don't even know whether they do that anymore. You know, they deliver meals to your house and everything. I'd love to get that. It's very pricey, though. Speaking of pricey, I would like to get a Peloton bike. David Elliott bought his wife a Peloton bike, and she worships it. And she's like the queen of Peloton. You know, she even was invited to the studio on 23rd Street to ride. She's so good at it. But the one exercise I like is SoulCycle. Everyone knows this. So the Peloton bike is not a horrible choice for me. It's just, you know, it's over $2,000. But they have like a monthly, you know, thing you can do where it'd be like $56 a month, and it's totally worth it because my SoulCycle classes are $40 every session. So you use the Peloton bike twice a week, I'm already saving money than going to SoulCycle. So the question is, will I use it? I think I will. That is the form of exercise that I enjoy. But it's expensive, and I didn't know if there's also a subscription involved. So right there's another cost, and no money's coming in. And I don't know. But, you know, doing some form of exercise is not a bad plan. And I like that form of exercise. Could I, you know, I was talking to my friend Elon, and he said, you know, his wife worships SoulCycle, and she goes all the time in the when you could. And so he bought her a bike, but it's not a Peloton. It's a less expensive bike, you know, just for the time being at home. And she downloads some classes for free and, you know, just works out on that. I guess I could do that. But it's like, I feel like, you know, if you're going to do it, do it the whole way. But, Yeah, I mean, I really shouldn't. It's not the time to spend the money. But if it's like a monthly fee, maybe I could pay off one of my bills that I'm paying that's $50 a month and just change it for that instead. I'm thinking about it. But, you know, I'm also thinking about moving. Thinking about moving down to the shore. Because my, you know, my friend lives down there. Dave Elliott lives down there. But also my friend Victoria, who's married to Vic Henley, lives down there, and she was telling me about it, and the price is right, and I'll tell you why I want to move out of the city. I'll tell you exactly why. I mean, I think it's time. This is a disaster. Living here, I didn't think it was that bad, but yesterday, Saturday, was the nicest day that there's been since the virus has happened. It was a beautiful, over 60 degrees day in New York City. The sun was shining. When I went outside, everyone was outside. Everyone was walking around as if this whole thing never happened. Streets were packed. I'd say masks half and half. Now, it's supposed to be a law, which is why I have to wear a mask all the time, and I can't stand it. I'm getting used to it, but I hate it. But it was definitely half and half. And people are just getting angry at everybody. They're yelling at people if they're not wearing masks, and then people are yelling back. And you really should just, I don't know. I mean, I don't think you're going to catch anything from walking outside. If you're going to the grocery store, if you're going to a bodega, you're going to someplace like that, a coffee shop, you should be wearing a goddamn mask. That makes perfect sense to me. But outdoors, I really just don't give a shit. I just don't care. I don't think I'm going to catch it that way. I don't care. But it's the law now, so I have no choice. But there's a whole bunch of people who just don't seem to care. And I don't care if they're not wearing a mask, but other people do. And I went to the pharmacy yesterday, and people are yelling at everybody. Everybody's on edge. Everybody's yelling at everybody. You got everybody, the neighbors in this building yelling at everybody because they're standing away. I'm at the table where they put our food deliveries and our newspapers. And this woman, who I don't know, but I say hello, she's wearing a mask. I'm wearing a mask. And she's sitting. Like, she won't come up to the table while I'm there. This is no way to live in New York City. You know, now it's like as if it was bad enough. There's like no friendliness whatsoever. I'm like, you know, we're both wearing masks. You're really that nervous that I'm going to infect you somehow that you can't come up to the table. You're standing that far away. You look like a fucking jackass. But everybody's so uptight. Everybody's on edge. It's a disaster. And this, New York City, is the worst place to be when you are trying to distance yourself, as everybody knows. Now, everybody's like, what's it like in New York? What's it like in New York? Because they're getting the reports that, you know, this is the epicenter for the virus. But of course, it's the epicenter. It has the most people. Meanwhile, that whatever figures they're giving you on the news every day are completely off. I mean, this is like a joke. Am I the only person that knows this? I know they're talking about it, but it's just like the Trump election all over again. Am I the only person shouting to everybody that all the statistics are off? Trump is going to win big because there's people like Sarah Silverman who don't want to hear that you're even thinking or contemplating voting for Trump. So you can't talk to people. You can't give them the pre-polls if somebody came up to you and who you say to voting. You're afraid to say you're voting for Trump because you're going to be lambasted. Well, it's the same thing here. And of course, he won because there was all these people in secret that were voting because everybody was yelling at you, like if you're not wearing a mask. It's the same thing. But there's all these people. I mean, all these people. I don't know how many people are in New York. There's, you know, a couple of million people. And I only know two people have been tested, and one of them lives outside New York right now. They moved. The Maracases, right? I know two people that have been tested. And all the people I've ever met and known, two people have been tested. Two. Which means that that statistic of people who have it is way off. Which means that pretty much everybody either had it, is going to have it, or has it now. You know what I'm saying? Which means, again, let's just, I said May 1st from the beginning, from March 9th, I said May 1st, but how about May 15th? Again, we all just walk outside and say, fuck it. Because it looks like we're all going to get it. And you're either going to get it in a bad form or a medium form or no form at all. But this is no way to live. We just got to open up everything the way it is again. Let's just sit next to each other in the theater. You're either going to catch it or you're not. And there it is, because there ain't any virus in sight. It's coming back in the fall. And here's the whole bottom line. This is why we just have to move on and take our chances. Because there's going to be another one just like this someday. Maybe 2 years from now, maybe three, maybe 20 years from now. It's going to happen again. Each time this virus comes up, we just sit inside. This is no way to live. This isn't the way we're supposed to live. I think we just have to take our chances. I know it's horrible, but what are we supposed to do? Nobody can function like this. I mean, it's great on the one end, not doing nothing. It's what I've been doing for the past year. Now everybody's enjoying what I've been doing for the past year. But, you know, life can't go on like this, at least for me. And I'm sure there's a lot of people a lot worse than me, you know, like the waitresses and stuff I know that definitely live paycheck to paycheck. I live paycheck to paycheck. And, you know, we're not making anything. And I don't know how to survive after this. I don't know what I'm going to do. My job is to plan live events. That's my new job. And we ain't planning any live events. I mean, who knows when the Comedy Cellar is going to open again? I mean, I'm technically doomed. But what I did realize is if I move out of the city and move to this place down the shore, which doesn't sound too bad, I can get a two-bedroom down there for the same price I'm paying right here, or a one-bedroom for about $1,000 less down the shore where I've always wanted to go. And I really mean, it would be the same people like, no, you love the city. You love the city. You go out so much. I'm like, I don't go out so much. It's kind of a myth. I know when I go out to you guys, it's exciting and it seems like I, you know, live this life, but it is really just once or twice a week. I mean, I am almost 60, you know, I mean, it's like, The going out is like that is over. It, you know, when I go out, I go out and I have an amazing time, but I really don't go out that often. I'm usually indoors, inside. Besides performing, I don't really go out that much. You know, go out for dinner like somebody else. I mean, like everybody else. But I mean, really, I only need to be in Manhattan four times a month if I was to move. Four times a month. You know, maybe two shows I got that I'm producing and then maybe two other shows where I'm just performing. I mean, if I miss those Saturdays and Sundays and Mondays that I do for free at the New York Comedy Club or the Comic Strip, am I really missing anything? You know what I'm saying? I mean, is it going to be weird to just come in and then have to go home and travel like an hour and a half home? Yeah, but what am I doing? I'm staying at home anyway. I probably use New York the way it's supposed to be used, but right now, after Saturday, and I know that's just one thing, but it's just like, you know, there's just too many people here. You know, I'm not nervous. I don't mind that there's too many people, but they're all dicks. And they're all just nervous and they walk away from you and it's horrible. And, you know, at least in this building, there were friendly people in this neighborhood. You know, but now it's just everybody's mean and nasty and on edge. And I don't know if that's changing anytime soon. Now's a good time to, you know, they're going to be giving away places to move or buy. You know, who's going to buy a place in Manhattan at this point? You know, now's the time if you had money, I guess. So I don't know. I'm very confused like everybody else. I mean, we all just don't know how this is going to end. So I've been trying to think of plans, you know, how can I make some money? I've been thinking about doing like, you know, like a web series. And I know that's obvious and stuff, but maybe now is the time to do something like that, you know, like a little series, but maybe if I can get a sponsor or something then I can make, because I don't want to charge people for anything anymore, you know, until things are normal again. I really don't know. I really don't know what I'm going to do. I mean, I don't think I can make it until August. I don't know. I don't want to bring anybody down, but again, you know, yeah, so You know, I'm just getting a little nervous. I'm getting a little depressed. I keep, you know, I mean, lately, I mean, I've been pretty good this whole time, but I guess as, I'll tell you what happened, actually. Thursday was a bad day for me in the sense, you know, just thinking I should just get drunk, but I just don't, you know, it's funny. I haven't had a drink in a month. Cause I just don't drink by myself. It's maybe that's what's causing the headaches. I don't know, you know, getting all the toxins out of my system. And, I know everyone else is drinking heavily, you know, and I just don't. And, so Thursday was the NFL draft, and all the guys I tailgate with decided to Zoom and watch the draft together. And that sounded like fun. But what happened was I was on with these guys, and I really like these guys a lot. Sam's this one guy who's such a douchebag. It's unbelievable. I don't know where this guy came from. Nah, I'm not going to say his name just in case. I did put the site out there, but the guys know who I'm talking about. Well, maybe they don't, but it's this new guy who, I don't know, just whatever. Anyway, the rest of the guys are awesome, right? And I've known them for a long time, and I love tailgating with them. And I think if the football season starts, we're going to tailgate at this guy's house, like in his garage, when it happens, which will be fun, like in Jersey somewhere. That'll be actually better than me going to the game since it's so hard to get to or whatever. Anyway, so we're watching the draft, and I'm watching these guys, and they all have people in the background because their families are there. You know, nobody is single like me except for one guy. Turned out he was dating somebody, and then he was at his girlfriend's house. So the other guys, their kids are coming in. Their wives are coming in. They're like, hey, everybody. You know, and I'm just sitting there by myself, and I'm like, well, this, you know, look at all these people that have all these interactions. Then if you watch the draft at all, it's all these people in their house with their families. It's the players. It's the general managers. It's the owners. And everybody's kids and wives and family members are all together. So everyone is still, you know, has people to talk to. I am by myself. There's no one here, which I'm sure other people are very jealous of, but, you know, in other ways. But on that particular day, I'm like, boy, you know, all these people, they got kids, they're coming in and they're bothering them, which is probably annoying to them. But to me, I'm like, gee, I really got nobody. I really got nobody. I'm looking to the right and I'm looking at my friends and they all got all these people and animals and stuff. And then I look to the left and it's all these players with their families waiting and they're so joyous because they just got, you know, drafted or whatever. And they're in these nice houses and these nice basements. You know, the only person who was alone was Roger Goodell, the owner, the president of the NFL. but we know he, you know, he has people there. Plus, he got sleepy at one point. It's really funny. He couldn't. He had to sit down after a while. He's like, oh, this has been going on for hours. But yeah, so it started to make me upset. Why wouldn't it? You know, I mean, at this point. You know, we talk, you know, my sister has her family, you know, my mother and I are the only ones alone. And it's sad. It's a little sad. I mean, it makes sense to be a little sad. It just does, you know, I mean, it makes sense, but, you know, and it's not, you know, it's like I'm used to being alone, but then it's like, all right, now I'd like, you know, at least I could always go out. If I wanted, I could go to the cellar. I could, you know, remember that always made me feel better because I have my cellar family. Well, you know, can't see them anymore. Can't go down to my bar. You know, there was a way to deal with this kind of thing, but now there's nothing. There's not a goddamn thing I can do about it. I go for a walk. You know, I finally was able to see my neighbor again, at least, and we walked the dog. So that's something, you know. I was just very jealous of people that are sequestered together a little bit, you know, as long as you have a big house. I mean, if you lived in this apartment and we were together, I'd want to throw somebody out the window. But if you have a nice big place, then, you know, it's not too bad. You know, go to your own separate ways and you got, you know, I'm jealous of people that are outside on in their yards or let alone, I told you last week, driving somewhere, so jealous. I tried to do that Saturday, but I wasn't feeling well. Couldn't do it. And then I said to myself, where am I going? Where am I going? I don't even have anywhere to go. There's no one I can visit. This blows. So, yes, I've been feeling a little sorry for myself. Well, so what? That happens sometimes. I mean, some, you know, it's just once in a while I get upset, like everybody else, get a little nervous. But there's plenty of stuff I've been doing. Like the other day, I went to CVS to pick up my prescription, and I was able to get brand name toilet paper and paper towels. I am talking about Bounty paper towels and Charmin toilet paper. Not that other brand they've been selling called Panda toilet paper, which is hilarious. No, they had it. And then I went to the counter and I was like, is this okay? Is it, can I buy this? Like, you know, you're just like, you know, it's like bringing that Dinty Moore beef. Is this okay? Does anybody mind if I, they're like, oh no, no, you could take as many as you want of those Dinty Moore beef stews. Sure, this is all right? Because I couldn't believe it that they had it. So, yeah, I bought actual brand name toilet paper and paper towels. I could not believe it. I was thrilled. And I completely pulled a dick move and just wiped them out of Circus peanuts. And, folks, if you think I'm talking about regular peanuts, you'd be wrong. Look it up online. Circus peanuts are orange peanuts that are soft marshmallow banana-flavored peanuts. They're disgusting. The only people that like them are me, Rhoda, and my sister. Those are the only three people, so I'm surprised they still make them, but I love them. And I wiped them out of the store. And I'm like, is this okay? They're like, please take them. No one else cares. They are delicious. That's probably what also caused my head. I'm probably diabetic. But Circus peanuts, hello. And they were all full of peeps as well. Nobody seems to want those as well. I didn't get those because I got the Circus peanuts. I mean, you got to choose your poison, you know. And it truly is possible poison. But that was a very pleasant experience at that CVS, let alone, you know, you can check yourself out so you can buy, you know, stuff, you know, if you needed it. I didn't buy it, but I'm saying, you know, if you need a hemorrhoid cream or something like that, you know, you can check it out on your own, you know. Everybody was very nice there. Not at like the Duane Reade, which was real trouble. Everybody was yelling at everybody, and they're like, wait, you want me to wait outside? And there's this big line, and you don't know where the line is, and people are yelling and screaming. It's horrible. Everybody's on edge. And the longer we stay in, the worse it's going to get. So when Robert Kelly was talking about getting a gun, it's not a horrible idea because it's, you know, it may come to that. People are going berserk, and people handle stuff in different ways. But I don't know. I still can't find any Lysol. That'd be nice. Just to, you know, spray stuff. Just to, you know, I still have some left, but I'm like using it so sparingly. I kill for a can of Lysol. The good stuff Lysol, not just the not name brand stuff. I'm never going to find that. Never going to find those Clorox wipes. I stopped using those. You know, meanwhile, I've been using Fantastic with bleach on my mask, and maybe sucking in those fumes when I go outside is what caused my headaches or dizziness. That does make a lot of sense, but I would assume it goes away after a while, but maybe not. That's what I've been wiping it down with. I don't know what else to use. That mask has got to last me for the duration. I don't have any other choices. And remember the good thing about this whole thing. We're forgetting about the good parts about the coronavirus. They just canceled the gay parade. Sweet magic. Again, nothing to do with the gays. Just so happy they're canceling all the parades. Man, if the coronavirus was worth anything, it is the cancellation of all the shit I hate. Sweet magic. Oh, God, that made me happy. That made me so happy when I saw it was canceled. And that's in June. June. That was great, right? It's funny. I've been thinking, you know, now when I go outside, when I'm ready to go outside, I put my wallet and put my money in my pocket. I get my hat on, you know, whatever. And now my routine is I get the mask on as well. There's no reason not to just put it on before I go outside, and I just put it on like while I'm putting my coins in and everything, because you got to wear it downstairs now. They all want it in the building and everything. Even when I go down to just get the newspaper, I got to put it on because people are dicks. And I was thinking, I hope somebody lets me know when it's the last day of mask. I keep thinking I'm going to go outside and everybody's going to start laughing. Hey, that kid's still wearing his mask. What an asshole. Hey, kid, take off that mask. Like in the movie Mask. I keep thinking I'm going to walk out, I'm going to be the last person wearing a mask. Hey, jerk off, it's over. He didn't get the message. What an asshole. That is hilarious. Also, before we get to the really good stuff that I have planned for today, I do have a lot of plans today, a lot of music, a lot of clips, a lot of fun stuff that we enjoy on the Nightfly podcast to keep ourselves company and with things to do. A lot of fun. Has anybody seen The Last Dance, which is an ESPN documentary on the 97-98 Chicago Bulls with Michael Jordan? Now, even if you don't like sports, I know there's a lot of people, you know, when I started the podcast, it was about sports and, you know, I do like to talk about sports and I have a gambling problem and everybody knows that. And once in a while, we talk about sports on the show. But even if you don't like sports, and since there's nothing to do, I highly recommend this documentary. I was talking to my friend Michelle. She doesn't care for sports, but I said, you might like this documentary. It's very well done and it's a period in time. And what this documentary has, which I didn't know, and it's confusing of why it's just released now, 20 years later, but apparently what happened was in 97, the Bulls had just won 5 championships, and they were going for their second three-peat to win 6. They just won the last 2. And apparently, the general manager of the Bulls in 97 was a complete douchebag and was trying to kind of disband the team. And everybody kind of found out about it. And they were furious. They're like, I don't understand. We're on top of our game. Why is this guy trying to break us apart? So they were all, this guy was such, he had a small man complex. He was a fat guy. They fucking hated him. He was a douchebag. And they all decided kind of as a team, including Phil, you know, the coach, who's for some reason name escapes me now, New York Knick and everything, you know. Then he goes to the Lakers. I'm an idiot. I'm having trouble. I told you I got a headache and dizzy. Phil Jackson. He knew they wanted him out and everything. It's really fucked up. And Michael Jordan's like, I'm not doing this without Phil Jackson. And why are you firing a coach that just keeps winning, you moron? So it's just like this guy was like, hey, I don't need you guys. I can build a team again. So he was being a dick. So they were all angry. So they said, this is going to be it. This is the last dance. So Phil Jackson apparently would give a season a theme, and he made this document or a mission statement, as they would say in Jerry Maguire, that clearly said 97-98, the last dance, and that's what it's called. And the Bulls gave them, the cameramen, complete access for the entire season. So there is all this wonderful footage, but what I can't understand of why it's taken 20 years. And the only thing I can figure out as I was watching is that this general manager douchebag is now dead. And that's the only reason I can think of why it took so long, because this guy's dead and they really rip him a new asshole, which he deserves. And all they have is Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen making fun of him and doing fat jokes because they hate him. They hate him. And can you blame them? Who is this guy? I mean, yes, was he planning for the future after those guys were on? But, you know, there's better ways to go about doing that. You know, I mean, and since the NFL draft has happened, it's funny because this is happening in Green Bay. Green Bay just hired a quarterback with their first or second round draft pick, which makes Aaron Rodgers feel like a douchebag. However, that's what they did to Brett Favre in Green Bay. So that's what Green Bay does, but it's still a douche move when Aaron Rodgers has not put out that he's retiring at all, where there's no plans to retire anytime soon. So I guess these things happen. But anyway, this documentary is excellent. Everyone's involved. So you finally get Michael Jordan talking candidly. You get Scottie Pippen. These are people you just don't hear from normally. Dennis Rodman. I think he's on this one. I haven't seen it. They only put out the first two last week. They're doing it a week. You get two a week. There's like 8 or 10 of them. I watched the first two, and they were completely riveting. I mean, really riveting, whether you like sports or not, I think, because we all know about the Chicago Bulls. But the whole, you know, the politics and all the stuff that goes into it, let alone, you know, the way they describe Michael Jordan, who, whether you, again, like sports or not, I mean, nobody doesn't like Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan is, you know, like, there's Babe Ruth, you know, and Michael Jordan. You know, I don't even, you know, you question if LeBron would be in there, but no, I think it's Babe Ruth and Michael Jordan. I mean, if there, you know, I mean, that's, maybe there's somebody I'm missing, but it's pretty much, I mean, Michael Jordan really was the Babe Ruth of basketball. And he just doesn't talk about it. Dennis Rodman is talking, and they're all talking candidly about what happened, and really candidly, it's great. Plus, Obama's in it. Bill Clinton's in it. They all gave access, and that's what makes it good. Everybody is talking. You know, the owner of the Bulls, everybody, and they're all being very candid, and that's what making it excellent. It was supposed to come out about 3 or 4 months from now, and they're like, oh, let's put it out now while everybody's home. So I highly recommend this documentary called The Last Dance. ESPN is putting it out every Sunday night, I think around 8 o'clock, but obviously you can go on demand and watch it. And it's really terrific, very entertaining. I really would be interested for somebody who doesn't like sports to see if they like it. So let me know if you agree. You know, tweet me or DM me on Instagram or write me at DaveJuskaFans@gmail.com. Okay, let's see. Oh. Interesting news on the Rota front. I just found out recently, and this is huge news. My mother, ladies and gentlemen, huge news. You know how Rota only has offered people when they come over, including the grandchildren, tuna fish for 30 years. That's all she's ever offered at her house. Worst grandmother ever. What would you like to eat? I have frozen bagels and tuna fish. That's all she has ever eaten. That's all she's ever, you know, offered when you come over is tuna fish and maybe a cut up tomato. But apparently now Rota has gotten off tuna fish and now she eats salmon in the cans, just like tuna fish, but she's moved on to salmon. This is huge news. So now if you were to come over Rota's house with me, like Cousin Frankie and Joe, you might get a choice of frozen bagels and a can of salmon. So this is big. I mean, this is big. So that's breaking news. I don't feel like playing the clip. I should have opened with the clip, but the breaking news clip, but we haven't played that in a long time, and I really don't care. And quite frankly, I'm about to share with you the clip I have ready, which may be the funniest thing of all time that I'm about to tell you. Are you ready to laugh? Have you gone to the bathroom? Have you ordered enough? Are you ready? I am going to make you laugh very hard right now. That's how confident I am in this gag. And if I could do this on stage, I would. So, even with my opening, it will amuse you, but wait for the ending. I'm watching Buck Rogers of the 25th Century on Saturday night at midnight on MeTV. we've played that amazing theme before. Best song. starring Gil Gerard. Boy, he's terrific. Oh, he's a great actor. I'm doing Dave Thomas doing Bob Hope talking about how great Gil Gerard is. Really one of the greatest TV themes of all time. Yeah, I'm going to go there. Not only did I see the theatrical release movie, but I watched the TV show every week. Anyway, so I'm watching Buck Rogers, which is, you know, I watch it because that Erin Gray was the hottest. I mean, she's so gorgeous in it. And then they always had Princess Ardala, who was arguably even hotter and yet not hot. But because of the way she dressed and the fact that she was evil and always wanted to have sex with Buck is hot. So, yeah, she's really sexy. So I'm watching this episode that I, you know, have seen multiple times. But there is a line from it, which I recorded off the TV, and then I'll tell you how it ends.
For the food, for the entertainment, and for the hospitality, I thank you. As you know, we possess a weapon which is capable of destroying not only New Chicago, but each and every city on the planet Earth. Of course, being a merciful and civilized culture, we have no intention of doing so. If you fulfill one simple request. Very shortly, I will succeed my father to the throne of Draconia. And according to our laws, within a year of doing so, I must wed the most physically and genetically sound human male available, or lose my throne to a successor. Well, I have found just such a man right here on Earth. And unless you turn him over to me for the wedding ceremony, our pyramid weapon will destroy the Earth city by city by city.
Now that's where they cut to me at Big Ed's at the all-you-can-eat rib place being like, all this, you can just have as much as you want? This is fantastic. Now that's comedy.
And according to our laws, within a year of doing so, I must wed the most physically and genetically sound human male available.
And then it's cut to me being like, this is absolutely delicious. And I can have as many of these as I want. It's unbelievable. That's all I was thinking of. I must wed the most genetically and perfect man ever. And then they just cut to me, you know, in an all-you-can-eat chicken wing or rib-eating contest or something like that. Or me just sitting in front of the TV, what, rubbing my belly. I just couldn't stop laughing. I'm like, wait, how did they not put that in already? I got to cut that together, right? But I got to wait till I can get to Big Ed's again so I can film it. I think it's got to go right from that. Or I will destroy the city by city by city. This is amazing. Yeah, another order, please, over here. Boy, this is good. Yeah, and don't forget the hot fudge sundae. Oh, waiter, I'll have the Nestle Road pie now. And bring the pork loin. And don't forget the cheese plate. Oh. Well, I hope that came off in air the way I have it in my mind. As hilarious. Well, it turns out the guy she was talking about was Buck Rogers, but it would have been way funnier if it was me. And what a ridiculous thing to say. What a ridiculous show. But apparently, for me to get my throne, I have to wed the hottest guy on Earth. I don't know who wrote that, but I'm assuming it was a man. Although it could have been a woman. If you think about that plot, right, it would have been the opposite way if it was, who knows. Of course, they didn't have female writers back then. That's ridiculous. Hello? Oh, I don't know. I thought you'd enjoy that. I had to tape it for myself because I thought it was the funniest thing I've ever seen. I'm like, well, I've got to put that on the podcast. So stuff like that keeps me going on a daily basis because that is hilarious. Meanwhile, I had written that and then Joe's daughter texted me a piece of, her mother Jocelyn was making ribs that night, and she cleaned the bone, and she sent me a picture. She goes, "Oh, that's how it's done." This is a 17-year-old kid. She said, "This is how it's done." I'm like, "Shut up, you rotten kid! How dare you speak to me like that? I am your elder." That's all right. Meanwhile, the other day I ordered Shake Shack, right? I ordered Shake Shack. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to order Shake Shack. I'm going to order a couple of burgers and some fries and a chocolate shake. I'm going to go for it. I'm going to go for it because everything I order something is $40. $40 for two hamburgers and a fry. I order it. They forget the fries. They forget the fries. Oh, I left the manager the most nasty message on his answering machine. I might write a letter too. I mean, that just really pissed me off. Right on the bag, it says exactly what should be in that bag. There's only three items. How do you forget one? I was furious. I don't want my money back. I just want to yell at somebody. That ain't cool. If you're going to find the order from a place like that, fuck you. You know, Taco Bell was missing stuff. I get when they miss stuff. They're stupid. But Shake Shack should be a little bit, you know, they're high-class fast food. So I'm going to give Danny Myers a little piece of my medicine there, and I'm going to whatever, you know, piece of my mind. I'm all over the place. I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about because I didn't get those fries. Oh, boy, was that disappointing. That was so disappointing. I know you can understand. All right, let's get into what we have to get in today because it's very exciting. And when I say exciting, it's really not, except for people that listen to The Nightfly because you love it, right? You do love it. Okay, so, right, let's open with this. Again, you know, watching TV at all hours, things I would never normally watch, I found another most interesting thing. I'm watching this show called The Time Tunnel. I've never seen it before. I don't remember it growing up. I'm pretty sure it's from the 60s. Maybe it was on when I was born, but I'm sure I was two. It's a pretty stupid show. It's not as interesting as it should be since they travel through time and go to different places. It's like Quantum Leap, but it's dumb, and it's not very successful, and I don't know. Anyway, I see the credits, and I see this guy who's in it, and I'm like, well, now I got to watch. You know, who the fuck is this guy? And so what we'll do is like we did last week when we played the game of like, can you guess, you know, that the James Bond theme was sung by Soft Cell, who also did Tainted Love. Can you guess Rick Moranis is singing the Vapors Turning Japanese song? You know, we're playing a little game here because we're trying to kill time. Not kill time, but, you know, spend our time with some fun times. So here is the guess. Again, I'm playing the thing called Stupid Time Tunnel. Can you guess who the guest star is? By just the voice. Now, that might be, it was hard to see it in person, but the voice, I don't know. Maybe when you just hear it without seeing it, maybe you'll be able to guess it, but it is quite fascinating.
I don't care, tell General Packard of my can't wait. I've got to know what strength to commit tomorrow, and I've got to know today. Back now. So you're back from the American lines. Have you got that information?
No, sir.
I told you that information was vital.
Yes, sir, but the woods are full of American patrols, sir.
I know all about the American patrols. Who are these men?
We ran into them inside our own lines. Spies, sir.
Spies?
Spies? Now, wait a minute.
Are you the commander of this regiment, sir?
I have that honor.
Well, this may sound strange to you, but there's been a mix-up. We're non-combatants here, and if you'll give us a chance to explain, we can...
You'll have every chance to say what you like at your trial. Trial, after which you'll be shot, as the spies you are. The sergeant, take them away.
Classic shit. Who is it? Who was that British officer? Who was it? Did you recognize it? Now I'll play you for what he's known for.
American history lesson. You don't know nothing about Lady Liberty standing there in the harbor with her torch on high, screaming out to all the nations of the world, send me your poor, your deadbeats, your filthy. And all the nations sent them in here. They come swarming in like ants. Your Spanish PRs from the Caribbean there. your Japs, your Chinamen, your Crouch and your Heaves, and your Lincoln's Head. And they're all free to live in their own separate sections. Where they feel safe, and they bust your head if you go in there. That's what makes America great, buddy.
That's right. It was Archie Bunker. It was Carol O'Connor doing a British accent. Now that's comedy. Is that unbelievable? Did you guess it? Were you able to guess it at all? Kind of when he comes out of there, you kind of hear it, but... boy, was that fascinating. Who knew he even did anything before that? I mean, obviously, he must have done something before that because, you know, you don't really get a show like that unless you've done something before. But, wow, that was quite interesting. That was about 4 or 5 years before he was Archie Bunker. But fascinating. Doing a British accent. Never would have seen that coming. Never would have seen that coming. And that stupid show is called The Time Tunnel. And I was... Then I started looking up stuff like that. And this is their stupid... The Time Tunnel... So they had the Time Tunnel... All right, so let me listen to their theme songs. This is horrible. I mean, these are really bad theme songs. You know we love theme songs, like Buck Rogers was so good. This is the stupid Time Tunnel theme song.
Two American scientists are lost in the swirling maze of past and future ages during the first experiments on America's greatest and most secret project, the Time Tunnel.
Sounded a little better this time listening to it just on the audio, but I don't know. Then after that, they had the same show by the same guy, which is Irwin Allen, who we're going to talk about in a second, called Land of the Giants. Again, something I didn't see. And here's their stupid theme song. It's a little better than the other one. It's all 60s bad. It's okay. It's kind of stupid. I mean, then the guy completely got it right, of course, when he did this one. Now, this is exciting. Here's my favorite. You gotta like that, right? I mean, that's exciting. But what about when he changed it up for season 2 and 3? It's even better. And he really jazzed it up.
Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, those are pretty good, right? But the first two, just absolutely horrible. I mean, it's like, I almost think like those shows weren't popular because the theme songs were so bad. And that Lost in Space one is so good. And the guy was like hit or miss, you know. It turns out this jerk off hit pay dirt. I mean, that's pretty good, right? I mean, you know, you come up with that one. It's not horrible. Can you believe it was the same dude? It's unbelievable, right? I guess he figured it out. He must have been just a young boy, and then it figured, can you believe the same guy that did that horrible time tunnel? He did Star Wars and then went on to be, you know, maybe the greatest person ever. I mean, really, if you, I was looking up his stuff, it's really quite remarkable. During the same period, you know, where they talk about his career, Williams developed a grand symphonic score in the fashion of blah, 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 the golden age of Hollywood composers, which makes sense. The Star Wars theme is among the most widely recognized in film history. I mean, that's so true and so unbelievable. And then it's just, you know, and, you know, he did Jaws, right? So we all know the, and then, I mean, you know, like, and there's so much more, obviously, Harry Potter theme, Home Alone, but then even this. He's good. I mean, the guy continued to deliver. He didn't just, I mean, I don't think I know any composer, and maybe I'm just being naive, but I mean, if he's doing stuff in the 60s, and then in 2000, he's still completely relevant. Not even Paul McCartney was able to pull that off. You know what I mean? He's completely relevant, you know, with Harry Potter and stuff like that. I mean, it's quite unbelievable. That's a hell of a career. It's very impressive and quite amazing. But let's turn to Irwin Allen, who was interesting, who did all those three shows and was smart enough to find this John Williams guy. He goes, yeah, I got another one for you. You're all right. Until he went to the movies. Now, this is funny. Irwin Allen, who was the king of the, you know, he did these 60s shows, which were very successful. Or at least Lost in Space was. And then, you know, went into the movies, which normally doesn't work, but made two of the greatest box office hits of the 70s in The Poseidon Adventure and The Towering Inferno, was the king of, and pretty much developed the disaster movie. You know, not, he didn't do Earthquake or Midway or any of those things, but, you know, he designed the blueprint for all of those movies in the 70s that made a lot of money. But my favorite is when they talk about Lost in Space and how cheap he was. The kid who, you know, Billy Mumy said he was very good at writing television pilots that sold. His unwillingness to spend money hurt his show's quality once on the air. A monster costume that appeared on one of his shows, for example, would appear on another a few weeks later with new paint. Writer John Abbott described Allen as paradoxical. He was a man who, when told the cost of a spaceship for a Lost in Space alien, snapped, let him walk, and then let the show be canceled rather than take a cut in the budget. I think it's funny because then if you read the beginning, it's early. Irwin Allen was born in New York City, the son of poor Jewish immigrants from Russia. he majored, blah, blah. He left college because of financial difficulties caused by the Great Depression. I mean, you know, it's just funny because he's Jewish and he was so cheap, but it also makes sense, you know, when you grow up that poor and he wasn't able to go to college because of the Great Depression, which is technically what we're in now or we will be. It does make sense that somebody would be rather frugal and wouldn't want to spend. On the flip side of that, though, he spent the most money Well, this is interesting too. It's funny. He was this kind of visionary and yet also not a visionary. As they say, the rise of new filmmakers like George Lucas reportedly caught him off guard. According to one book, the success of Star Wars bewildered him. He could not understand how a film with apparently no stars or love story could enrapture audiences so fervently, because he was obviously just an older guy at that point. But it's kind of funny because he did have some sort of vision, even though those movies are awful. That people wanted to see disaster. I mean, the way he said, I'm not going to run out of disasters. Pick up the daily newspaper, which is my best source of crisis stories. You'll find 10 to 15 every day. People chase fire engines, flock to car crashes. People thrive on tragedy. It's unfortunate, but in my case, it's fortunate. The bigger the tragedy, the bigger the audience. And why wouldn't he say that? The Poseidon Adventure and the Towering Inferno made a fortune. And he got them backed by a corporate of 20th Century and Warner Brothers put money together for the Towering Inferno. I think the only time the two studios came together to put together a big epic movie, disaster movie, was Titanic. So it's funny that this one dude with his, you know, just I'm the director of Lost in Space, but I want to get these movies together. Yeah, it's gonna be great, don't worry about it. Of course, that was after the Poseidon Adventure, so that made so much money. And it's fascinating that, you know, a guy like that would be able to get the kind of people he got in the Poseidon Adventure, because again, he was just coming from doing Lost in Space. And the cast is Gene Hackman and Ernest Borgnine, Red Buttons, Shelley Winters, Roddy McDowell, Jack Albertson, Leslie Nielsen. But he had five Oscar winners in one movie. That's pretty impressive, especially since they didn't know that it was going to be what it was. And then, you know, I mean, it even did well at the Oscars. Like, it wasn't nominated for Best Picture or anything, but Shelley Winters was nominated for Best Supporting Actress. It won the Best Original Song, for which we all know the song. I mean, it goddamn won. I mean, just this disaster movie won Best Song, which I guess Titanic did too, when you think about it. I mean, we all remember this song. I didn't say it was good.
There's got to be a morning after.
It doesn't make any sense that this goes to the Poseidon Adventure.
Hold on through the night.
It won.
We have a chance to find the sunshine. Let's keep on looking for the light. Oh, can't you see the morning? Waiting right outside the storm. Why don't we cross the bridge together and find the place that's safe and warm? It's not too late. We should be giving.
Fascinating. Won an Oscar, the Poseidon Adventure, with this guy Irwin Allen, who did, you know, Lost in Space. It's unbelievable. I don't know, to me, it is. I'm fascinated by it. And then I think it was nominated for Best Original Score, which was actually John Williams. So he went with him. He did the score. John Williams went with him to the movies. You know? I mean, why wouldn't he, of course? I mean, I guess it makes sense. It was nominated for Best Costume Design, Best Sound, Best Art Direction, Best Cinematography, and Best Film Editing. That's unbelievable. This guy who did Lost in Space, a couple years later, makes this movie that was nominated for all these Academy Awards and ends up winning one, where you can at least say, like, winner of one Academy Award, even if it's Best Song. But the amazing thing is that 2 years later, he does The Towering Inferno, And because the Poseidon Adventure was such a hit, you know, you could get anyone you wanted at that point. So he was able to get Paul Newman and Steve McQueen and Faye Dunaway and Fred Astaire, Robert Vaughn, Robert Wagner, O.J. Simpson, which is hilarious, of course. And then that at the Academy Awards, the stupid Towering Inferno, which doesn't hold up in any way, shape, or form. I mean, the Poseidon Adventure holds up maybe a little bit more, but the Towering Inferno is really awful, except, you know, nobody had seen a movie like that before. It also wins Best Song. And I don't even know this one, but it won. By the same lady sung it, "We May Never Love Like This Again," but I don't know it, but it won.
We may never love like this again.
And I think the song is sung just like in the Poseidon Adventure, like at the ballroom or, you know, before the disaster happens when everything is going great, like in Die Hard. It's a fascinating. It's funny that he couldn't put it together again. It's just like it seemed like he had this formula which seemed to work with people, but
let's give our all, release the dreams inside.
Yeah, I mean, this is just awful, you know. But it's fascinating. And then when the Academy Awards came around, it killed it. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. Irwin Allen was nominated for Best Picture. I don't know how he lost to The Godfather Part II, but he did. I mean, that will always confuse me, how Irwin Allen lost out to Francis Ford Coppola in The Godfather Part II. I mean, that's just stupid. That's weird. Fred Astaire was nominated as Best Supporting Actor, but he lost out to Robert De Niro in The Godfather Part II. That doesn't make any sense either. I mean, you know, these people are just horrible who, you know, decide this kind of shit. It was nominated, John Williams, again for Best Original Dramatic Score. This is before Jaws. So this guy was on. He lost out to, Godfather Part II. That's ridiculous, of course. And then the best song, they won again. I just can't believe it. They won the stupid best song again. They won. It was nominated for best sound. They ironically lost out to Earthquake, which is kind of funny since, you know. They won best cinematography. And The Godfather Part II wasn't even nominated. They won. How is The Godfather 2 not nominated for Best Cinematography? That's fucked up. They were nominated for Best Art Direction, but lost out to The Godfather Part 2. They won Best Film Editing. The Towering Inferno won Best Film Editing, and The Godfather 2 was not nominated. Blazing Saddles was nominated. Chinatown, Earthquake, and The Longest Yard were nominated for Best Film Editing. And yet The Godfather 2, which has kind of legendary editing, the way it tells its story, was not even nominated. What the fuck? How does Blazing Saddles get nominated, but not Godfather 2? We all love Blazing Saddles, but come on. Best Film Editing and The Godfather 2's not even nominated? Chinatown? Makes sense. Earthquake? Are you kidding? The Longest Yard? What the fuck kind of competition is this? And The Towering Inferno one. That to me is completely fascinating. I mean, really fascinating. I just don't get it. I mean, it's weird, right? Come on. I mean, that's some fucked up shit. Now, that all being said, Irwin Allen was the king of the disaster movies. and that's what he was known for. And then I think he also did The Swarm, which is like a bee movie, like an actual bee, not a bee movie, you know, bees, the buzzing bees. And Beyond the Poseidon Adventure, which did nothing. So it was over for him after The Towering Inferno. You know, once Star Wars came around, everything was done. You know what I'm saying? They still had the airport movies, but that's about it. But once Star Wars came out, that's what he said. He got caught off guard, so it was over for him, right? So that Star Wars comes out. Even after Jaws, he was probably finished. I mean, stuff like that. But Star Wars just changed everything, so then they didn't need that guy anymore, and then they could make movies that would last a long time. Towering Inferno does not hold up. Poseidon Adventure kind of holds up, but it's still very slow. You know, whereas Star Wars, we all know, I mean, it's you can watch it every day. So anyway, SCTV again, as we've just been playing nonstop, because why not? Would I be playing this every week if we were doing normal podcasts? No, but here we are. You know, what are we doing except looking up clips, sharing them with each other, having a good time? This is the funniest thing. I mean, it's not the funniest thing, but it's funny. SCTV, again, Rick Moranis and his geniusness. We were talking last week, Rick Moranis skewering Michael McDonald. Does the Irwin Allen show. And I even remember when they were saying coming up the Irwin Allen show, and they just had a clip of it and they show Charlton Heston getting nervous. I was like laughing so hard. And that was just before I even saw what the show was. I'm like, this is going to be so funny. The thing about this, they have the Irwin Allen show. I mean, everybody kind of knew who Irwin Allen was. Back in, you know, in the 70s, they knew he was the king of the disaster. It's kind of funny when a producer is known that well, but he, you know, he had a niche. Or is it a niche? I don't know. You know, I always pronounce words wrong. Please don't get angry at me. Or just say, what an ass. Well, you can say that. Anyway, so the Irwin Allen show on SCTV is really great, and Rick Moranis is brilliant, and it's so funny, and it's such a funny concept. And
live from Hollywood, the earthquake capital of the world, it's the Irwin Allen Show with guests Ernest Borgnine, O.J. Simpson, Shelley Winters, Charlton Heston, Red Buttons, and also on tonight's show, Paul Newman, Robert Wagner, George Kennedy, Lauren Green, and Tally Savalas. And now, here's your host, Irwin Allen.
Well, welcome to the show. We've got a terrific one for you tonight.
So so he comes out, and it's a Johnny Carson Tonight Show set. He comes out from the curtain. First of all, they have a ball, like a disco ball with all the names on it, and then the ball drops, you know, like in – because everything's got to go wrong. He comes from the curtain. He's wearing a bow tie and glasses. I mean, that, I don't know if that's the way Irwin Allen works. He doesn't care. He comes out and he locks himself in this like barbed wire like fencing, so he's safe where you know that his guests are not going to be, or that's going to be the gag.
I want to bring out our first guest, lovely starlet and a good friend of mine. Would you welcome Shelley Winter?
And she comes out, they're smoking, and she comes out screaming, and Irwin Allen is laughing.
It's the most horrible thing I've seen in my life!
Shelley, you look terrific.
Oh, well, thank you. I feel good.
It's Robin Duke as Shelley Winter. She was never good on this show.
I really do. It must be my new diet.
A new diet. Well, let's talk about that a little later. First, let's talk about that new play you're doing in New York City.
So then all of a sudden you hear the noise and it's Robert Wagner, and he runs by in flames. And Irwin Allen's looking, but then he starts laughing.
Bob Wagner, ladies and gentlemen. Bob's got to leave a little early. He's busy rehearsing on a new film he's doing, being directed by Orson Welles. Shelley, what's the name of that picture?
It's called Who's Eating the Great Chefs of Europe.
Now, you're in that film, aren't you, dear?
Yes, I am. But right now we're negotiating meal allowance.
I see.
She's sitting there, and then a tidal wave comes over, and it's like on the set, all this water comes over, and she gets sucked in by a wave. And then he's got a bullhorn, and he's like, cut.
Who's the live back there. We need another guest.
I'm looking.
Who you got?
Red Buttons.
Red Buttons? How did he get out of that? Well, let's bring him out.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome Red Buttons.
And then it's Dave Thomas's Red Buttons.
Strange things are happening back there.
It's funny because I have no idea what Red Buttons is like, and he's doing an imitation, I guess. It's still funny because the way he's doing it, he's like holding his ear or something. I don't know what he's doing, but I remember laughing at it anyway, even though I didn't know who the hell it was.
Yeah, that's the closest I ever came to getting a roast in this business. And Johnny Carson never put up with that kind of stuff. And Jack Tar never got...
Look at the size of those things.
Then it's giant bees that are swarming over Dave Thomas. But Orwin Laffin just keeps laughing all the time.
Charlton Heston's here. Ladies and gentlemen, Charlton Heston, come on and sit down. I didn't know you were around. Charlton Heston.
Was that Red Buttons I saw out there?
Yes, it was Red Buttons. He deserved that, boy. That's what you get for wearing too much makeup. Nothing bees like more than a good number 9 pancake, if you know what I mean. Hey, Charlton, tell us about this book you've brought on. You're going to do a reading for us or something?
Yes, it's from my latest book, which is a journal I was keeping while filming El Cid in Spain.
While he's talking, Rick Moranis is putting on a hard hat, and he's, like, giggling, you know, as he knows he's about to do something.
It was a remarkable film, actually.
An earthquake's coming.
Irwin, you did it this time. This time you really did it. Damn you! Damn you! Damn you!
And then the set falls down on Charlton Heston, and it kills him. He's buried under the...
Guests of the Irwin Allen Show stay at the fashionable Ann Sheridan Hotel in downtown Los Angeles, now with the first 5 floors fully operational. And when in L.A., our guests travel in style, courtesy Poseidon Limousine Services.
And when they're showing the hotel, with the show in the hotel imploding, and then the Poseidon Limousine Services shows the car, like, flipping over. And then it's just the set and the end credits. The set is burning. And then it's just the end credits. It's so funny. I don't know why that always made me laugh, because it's just so stupid and funny. And the Irwin Allen Show, and he just lights people on fire, and they just all end up dying at the end. Oh my God, that's CTV. I hope that came out as good as watching it when you're explaining it over the air, but. It's kind of like reading, like, the Sunday funnies over the air, you know? I hope I was good at bringing it to you, as I enjoyed it watching it. So the last thing I will talk about today is that, you know, I've been watching this show, as I told you last week, called Classic Albums. And I saw 3 this week. I watched ones that interest me, but I watched U2, The Joshua Tree, which I'm not interested in at all. I don't like U2. And if I did like U2 and liked a couple of their songs, I hated The Joshua Tree. And it's funny, I was watching it. I'm like, well, let's see how they made it, because, you know, it's kind of, it'll be interesting to see, because they get the right people, like, you know, Bono and The Edge, everybody talking about it. But, oh my God, I fell asleep. I mean, that album just sucks. And even though it's exciting to see the way Edge makes music and makes that sound, it still was just, I'm like, I am so bored. I cannot stand it. On the flip side of that, they had Peter Gabriel. These were all done about 10 to 20 years ago. I remember we were talking about Pet Sounds last week and stuff. They had Peter Gabriel talking about So, the album So, with, you know, of course, this classic. Really, that was a real interesting hour where they're explaining how long the album took and the kind of meticulous effort that was put into it, where everything was done kind of the way Steely Dan works, and some of the other things we've seen were like the Beach Boys and the meticulous attention to every song. And it clearly came out, you know, where all this kind of stuff was very, even, you know, they talk about the drumming. They have the guys on that played on it. And they talk about really interesting. So you can hear how beautiful it sounds. This one too. I mean, it hits. I'm on my way, I'm making it. I've got to make it show, yeah. So much larger than life. And of course, I was waiting to hear about this one because this was such balls. It's like 6 minutes long, and how they found Kate Bush to do it and stuff. And I don't know if you remember the video. I mean, it's so, boy, what gall. It's just them hugging each other for like 6 minutes, moving around. But, you know, when they see how they talk about how they make it with the tom-toms or whatever they were using, and, you know, and you know, how they even decided it would be Kate. Who did he want to use? Oh, he wanted to use Dolly Parton. Can you imagine? But that kind of stuff really fascinates me. I really, if you ever get a chance to see it, it's a nice hour.
In this proud land, we grew up strong. We were wanted all along. I was taught to fight.
And they're all talking about how really great Kate Bush was. You know, I mean, you haven't heard of her ever again, but she was big in the college scene when I was there. I remember that's how I knew who she was, because I worked on an alternative radio station. Otherwise, I never would have known who she was. Mike Sodder knows. And then, you know, I mean, geez, it was, I mean, sometimes I forget that this was on that album because, you know, it's so, you know, you think about it with the John Cusack movie. I mean, this was, I don't know if this was huge when it came out, but I mean, that movie just made this an epic song. But they really go in, and you can hear the drumming, and they really go into, you know, how it's put together. You really appreciate the album more when you hear them talking about it. So, I mean, that I was really interested in that. And they also, you know, and I got a whole bunch more. I just keep taping them because some of them are good and some of them are bad. But when they're all forthcoming about, you know, when they, I mean, the beauty is they have all these guys, they all agreed to do it, which is, you know, that's the only way you can do it. If Peter Gabriel's not on it, then, you know, it's useless, which I guess they must know. So the other one they did was Tom Petty, Damn the Torpedoes. And that I was like, well, that'll be interesting because, you know, I like Tom Petty and everything, and you know, forget how big that was. But the funny thing is about that one is that they say most of it were, you know, one takes in the studio. completely different than Peter Gabriel, who would, you know, every instrument needs this thing. But it's great when they, but listen to these first four songs on this album, if, and tell me you don't recognize the riffs upon hitting play. Totally fascinated by shit like that. I really am. That's why I've just find, you know, they're the perfect thing to watch, you know, when I'm just sitting around really doing nothing. I don't know whether I'd watch it if they didn't have this going on, but I just like hearing about the process, and it really is fascinating. And of course it makes you upset in a way too, because you're like, hey, I should have learned a musical instrument. That would have been nice. But the way they play it, and the way they play the riffs, and the way they talk about how they found out what they do, and how most of them, because I also watched the Def Leppard one too for Hysteria, and you know, don't tell me that's not a classic album. It is. And you know, even there, they're, and that one took, I mean, that was an amazing one, because they you know, they came in saying, why can't we make, you know, Mutt Lange, why can't we make an album that has hits just like Michael Jackson's Thriller? I mean, I know that's how I made the Turbocharged movie, because of that movie, but it is interesting. They came in with that plan. We want every song on the album to be a hit. And again, you know, when you're thinking of these songs, they seem, well, you know, what is this? Just kind of like a metal-ish rock pop in a way. But you know, when you hear it broken down, it's like this. Well, this is one of my favorite songs, but it's... Then when you see what goes into stuff like this and how ridiculously popular this was, especially with me, this album meant so much to me. I mean, I must have listened to it so many times over and over again. When you hear them playing the, you know, the riffs just on a regular guitar, it's weird, because it, I don't know, it just doesn't seem like anybody wrote this, but of course they did. It just meant so much to me growing up. I thought they were amazing. And apparently this one was their first number one hit. Which I didn't know, because I know about Pour Some Sugar on Me, I thought was, but apparently this came first. A little ballad action. Ballad with still being hard rock. Ugh. This stuff, sometimes it's hard for me to listen to it now, because it reminds me of a really bad time in my life. You know, I was living in Astoria, and I was so goddamn miserable and so alone. So sometimes it's hard to listen to again. But again, watching them make the album, I was feeling both ways, because it's still so good. But it's hard to listen to now. And this was the one, apparently, they were finished making the album, and then they were just like, somebody had this riff, and much like, no, we got to do that. We got to do that. This turned out to be their... This is the one that apparently they sent the album out, and they released Woman first, which isn't a very good song. And then this was the fourth hit on the album, and this just put them in the stratosphere of this album would be legendary forever. Meanwhile, people don't even know who they are anymore. But at the time. And this song's dumb. You know? This was my least favorite song of the album. I liked all the other ones. But this was all, it's so fun. This album had so much, god damn, so much influence on me. Like, that's how I did the Cars movie, right? But then I remember even with this, when they, this is how I got the idea. I was doing this thing called Ty Romeo, and I was playing a guy who was like David Lee Roth, but he was older then. And so we did, so I wrote this song called Raise the Guillotine. I think I've told this before, but I made a song called Raise the Guillotine. And then because I saw Def Leppard come in when, you know, after Eric Clapton did Layla acoustic, then everybody was doing it. And when I saw Def Leppard do Pour Some Sugar on Me acoustic, I'm like, you got to be kidding, right? This is when you know it's over. This is when, like, that girl I was telling you about, Gilda Conrad, comes to a show, and then you know the fun is over. Once Def Leppard felt they needed to do Pour Some Sugar on Me acoustic, it was over. So then I did Raise the Guillotine acoustic, which again, I must have somewhere. You know, and I had glasses on and I made myself look older and stuff. And, you know, I don't know whether people got it or not, but yeah, we don't need to talk about anything else. I just was fascinated. I'm fascinated by that stuff. You know what they also said, and I don't know which album, which one it was, because they get mixed up. I want to say it was maybe Tom Petty, because, you know, then that was an absolute album, where the other ones were on album and CD at the time, because there's different, that might have been So, because that would be 86. So they were just kind of converting to CD at that point. So they were saying that in the album, if you're going to have bass heavy music, it has to be at the beginning of the disc, because something with the grooves towards the end of the disc aren't going to be able to fulfill the bass sound you need, because it just, that's the way the album works. When you get towards the end of the disc itself, the side, you can't have bass heavy songs for some reason, or it's vice versa. I think I'm right, and that you have to have them at the beginning. But yeah, they were, you could only have obviously a certain amount of songs. Otherwise, I think that's why So only has 9 songs, because it took up so much album space. Even though I'm pretty sure at that point everybody would get that on CD, but that was 86, and that's pretty much where the transition I feel was, or am I wrong? And maybe it was 84. I mean, that's an interesting question, which is very easy to find out. When did people start converting? I remember my friend Claudia said, well, what am I supposed to do with all the albums you have? And she goes, no, what the best thing to do is to buy everything that you're going to get now on CD, and everything else you had, just get their greatest hits compilations on CD, so you don't have to buy them all again. I remember that was like when CDs first came out. I mean, how old do you have to feel that, you know, not only did CDs change everything, but now they're not even a thing. Now CDs are even more irrelevant than albums, you know? I mean, it's unbelievable. That's something you would have thought, like, would have come and go. And just, oh, God, it's so weird, right? We're just so disgustingly old. Stuff is just, again, though, I'm glad. I'm glad all that shit is, you know, new and happening and stuff, because, you know, again, if we got to be in this horrible situation, which is what it is, man, the internet and the music and TV and all the stuff we have, it's some sweet magic. Again, because, oh, so Jeff Ross told me to start watching The Crown. I didn't think that would interest me at all on Netflix, even though, of course, I liked Matt Smith because he was Doctor Who. But I watched the first episode, I'm like, eh, and I like that British kind of stuff, and I like that monarchy stuff. I do enjoy that stuff, but the first episode wasn't doing it for me. And then I've been watching, and I'm very much enjoying it. So I'm in the fourth episode. And John Lithgow as Winston Churchill is awesome. So that makes me happy. Anyway, the fourth episode has this thing, you know, I looked it up, where London in 1952 gets covered with all this smog. It's so weird. This was made 3 or 4 years ago, where London gets covered in smog. It's all Winston Churchill's fault, technically. He had a report that said this happened in Pittsburgh in 1920. He didn't take actions to make sure it didn't happen here. And all the coal that they were making and all the pollution came down and put the whole city in filth, and they were wearing masks, and all the hospitals were overrun. It was so creepy to watch now. And Winston Churchill wouldn't come out, and they wanted him to resign, and the Queen was about to tell him, listen, you're an idiot, you're not dealing with it. He goes, it's fog, it'll lift, but it wasn't, and it was his fault. I mean, it really was like, you know, Donald Trumpian kind of stuff happened, even though this is Winston Churchill, who obviously was great at the time, but he was losing it at the time, so people were very difficult. But then, you know, he made this great speech finally, and then it won everybody over, which is something Donald Trump can't do. Clearly, if he's telling people to inject themselves with Lysol, which on one hand is hilarious, but on the other hand, now is just not the time for the hilarity. Now, it's funny because that's first thing I thought of. I'm like, that's brilliant. That's such a good idea. But, you know, don't, you know, check out the facts first before you say it. And even my brother-in-law, who's a huge Trump supporter, said, well, this is it. He's finally come up with something I cannot defend. That's the stupidest thing I've ever. Or we got to put sunshine inside. We got to inject sunshine into people. I mean, this is like what a villain does in a Spider-Man movie. You know, if we inject, we can actually inject artificial sunshine into patients, and we can cure them, really. And then, they go too far, and they don't take, you know, precautions, and the serum affects them, and they get hit by their own serum, and they become Sun Man. In fact, it's possible that was what happened in Superman 4. I'm not positive. I know they were dealing with some sun guy, but I mean, that's a disaster. That's that's when you just, how do you not hear yourself, I guess, or how do you just not come out and say, I fucked up. I know I need to go. Oh boy. Anyway, yeah, fascinating to see. Then I looked it up, and it was a real thing. And, you know, after that, they even have a thing on the end that says, you know, in 1956, they made a clear, you know, a Clean Air Act and stuff like that, so it doesn't happen again, because they were supposed to put these pockets into place to make sure it doesn't happen. Yeah, you know, it's possible, like I said, with this virus, we might have done it ourselves. I mean, we did, right? I mean, we're blaming it on China and their stuff and everything, but it could be all the pollution and all that kind of stuff, which is fascinating since it's all, you know, going away in a way. I mean, it's definitely lifting. There's things that are becoming cleaner. Like even people say the East River, which I'm looking at right now, which I don't see a difference. Somebody have said, doesn't it look cleaner to you? And I'm like, no, but it would make sense. All these boats aren't going through it anymore. I mean, it's kind of fascinating that Greta Thunberg must be so pleased. It is. I hope that lifts people's, you know, eyes and stuff into saying, like, boy, it looks like if we just relax for a week, we can even make things better. Think about if we can, you know, do things for a month like this to clean up. But nobody's in the mood to talk about anything except just getting out of this nonsense, which who knows what we'll get out or when we will or whatever we're doing, because next week will be May. And by then, it'll be 2 months, pretty much, since this happened. The next week when we're together on Tuesday, May something or other. But it'll definitely be May. So that is what we're talking about for next week. We'll be here all right, hopefully. I mean, assuming I don't have some serious, you know, virus or anything. But I felt pretty good today. I mean, my head hurts a little, but I was able to get through the podcast pretty good. Talk to you and have some laughs. So I'm glad I was able to bring it to you today and have a good time. So yeah, I'm just hoping to get better so I can come up with a plan to make some money and keep the podcast going and keep lots of other plans that I have in my head out, because most of the time I just like, well, maybe I'll take a nap. Well, I'll just turn on TV for a minute. I mean, that's what I've been doing the whole year anyway. It's just now I have a really good excuse because there's nothing I can do. So it's kind of great, but I really don't know. I don't know. You know. Looks like, I don't know, maybe things will open next week. You know, I saw the Starbucks down the street opened up today, like underneath the bridge, and that was been closed for a week. Maybe people are just doing what they want to do. It's probably the right move. I saw people sitting in there, too. So, Maybe the, you know, there's a lot of people that just don't give a shit and they just want to take the chances. I say let them. I don't know what else there is to do. Again, if it's coming back, there's no way to win. So let's just all go outside, take a deep breath, and hope for the best. Otherwise, I really hope everybody is doing terrific. I mean, I really, really hope everybody is doing well and staying cool. And, you know, I hope your money problems are going to be okay. And I just hope that you enjoy the podcast and that at least it brings you 2 hours of somewhat joy or just something. I don't know. Something that just takes your mind off it, even though we have to talk about it on occasion. But if we're talking about the Towering Inferno and Poseidon Adventure, which are ironically stuff we probably shouldn't talk about. That's the things that, oh, that can never happen. Well, apparently all that stuff can happen, and it has happened now. And all the stuff we never thought was going to happen in movies and TV that were hilarious to watch in movies and TV aren't very funny anymore. So I don't know, but it is funny to talk about disaster movies, even though we're talking about fun stuff, but we still made it about disaster stuff. So I guess I'm an idiot, but what else is on our mind except nothing? Anyway, I'll see you next week, and hopefully maybe I'll have a better plan of something, and that'll be that. We'll have a guest or two or something, and we'll work something out so we can all be together forever and just enjoy our quarantining time together as a whole and our Nightfly community. And I hope everybody has a great week, and I will see you in May. Ugh. Will it be a good May or a bad May? Are you a good witch or a bad witch? I guess we'll find out. Let's see if half of May can be salvaged. We'll see you next time on the Nightfly, everybody. Good night.